Oh man, you know what? I built this like fancy podcast studio at my other office, but because of, you know, familial issues, I'm stuck in this house that looks like it's sort of decorated like a Roman or like a medieval castle, but it's not. Like, I think my mother-in-law's mother like knitted that thing on the wall behind me. So that's
nice. I can see it. It kind of looks like is that the Americas in sort of knitted frames behind you there? Yeah. North America.
Yes. Okay. Well, back in the day, like in the 40s, when there was nothing to do except listen to the radio, evidently, like in rural Ohio, you just would knit a picture.
Yeah. It's like, okay. Sounds great.
And that's America. That's what they thought America looked like.
It's close enough. You know.
Look, I want to dissect this issue that's been really confusing me, which is we're doing a potpourri episode today. So hopefully it all smells like roses. But like I have just been watching these people that succeed in social media and it's succeed in media in general. And like, they're all narcissists. I want you to help me understand this because like, I thought back through the weekend when Silicon Valley Bank almost tanked and I got on Twitter and there was Grant Cardone, who is, I don't know what his qualification is to talk about the banking system, in there in a Twitter space, like interviewing somebody who claimed to be an expert in this thing. And I'm like, why does a certain group of people just rush to drama, even when you're totally, totally not capable or qualified to talk about it? So like this aspect of human nature, Chris, you're a student of human nature. I don't understand this.
I mean, I think, you know, Grant Cardone, I think all of these things are not so sneakily, opportunistic for them. It's like there can't be anything interesting happening in the real estate market. But if he can use the failure of a couple banks to be like, you know, what is safe is the Cardone 10X apartment building shit show that we want you to invest $2,500 in. Like, I think it all leads to that, right? It's pyramid schemes all the way down for people like that.
Well, and it's also, I think there's a distracting thing going on with some of these real estate private equity people. Like, it is so easy for you to lose all of your equity when you're 70% leveraged on these deals, right? And like it would not surprise me if 3 years from now, like half the investments that guy has made are like zeros, like total zeros.
Today in the Wall Street Journal, one of the top stories is Houston apartment owner loses 3,200 units to foreclosure. And I clicked on it, so excited to see like Cardone 10X Capital or whatever it's called. And it's not. But it's another one of those like scammy, like probably has a big Twitter presence, definitely is like pumping newsletters left and right, doing like direct mailers, like apartment syndicator who has like thousands of units, who just got into real estate 4 years ago. And somehow in 4 years, he has amassed enough money from idiots to not only buy 3,200 apartment units, but to lose 3,200 apartment units in a time when he probably financed a lot of those purchases with like 3 to 3.5% mortgages, which is particularly amazing. So I don't know.
I did talk to my buddy today, by the way, and he was like, yeah, I'm going to be buying a deal. And I was like, okay, well, what's it priced at? He's like, a 6 cap. I was like, what are interest rates right now? He's like, 6.5. I'm like, wait, so you're going to buy the privilege to keep shoveling money into the bank to buy this thing? And he's like, yeah, it'll turn out okay in the end. I was like, okay, I'm sure it will. I'm sure you know what you're doing. The funny thing is he does. So there's some aspect of the attractiveness of that investment that still kind of blows my mind.
Man, that's it's hard to imagine. And the opportunity cost too, of like all the other interesting or uninteresting things you could be doing with like T-bills at 5%, or, you know, the ability to create a business out of thin air using AI now. Like, you know, there's not that he could necessarily do those things, but it's like the opportunity cost of like shoveling that amount of money away, it's 6.5% interest is pretty wild. But
yeah,
let's do it. We'll do a monthly update on this friend, an anonymous monthly update, and see how things are going.
My friend is smart, not a narcissist, and does not run to drama. So I wish him nothing but the best.
Yeah.
I think he'll be fine. And he has some strategic rationale for this deal. So I don't want to poop on it too hard. But back to this idea of the narcissist, right? Like I don't know if you saw this whole thing over the weekend where like Jason Calacanis, you know, friend of the pod. Doesn't know it, but he's a friend of the pod.
Friend
and like the SMB attorney guy on Twitter
yeah.
are like getting into it mm-hmm. about something that doesn't matter to either one of them. Like, it's yep. just like, how is this like, and maybe this is why I'm bad at social media. Is this why I'm bad at social media? Because I just don't go wade into stuff that I have no business talking about. Like, I think that's my problem.
I think you have to. I mean, I, like, seemingly, well, you know, it's interesting. I think that there are, we've talked about both of them, I think, on the pod, and they have very different strategies. And I think they're actually business partners. But you have people like Sahil Bloom, who seems to be like the nicest guy on social media.
Right.
I saw somebody was like, he did like one of his classic kind of like frameworks tweets of like, these are like the frameworks that I think about when I'm like doing check-ins with my wife. And all these people were quote tweeting him being like, this Silicon Valley dude, which by the way, is not even a Silicon Valley dude. I think he's a New Yorker, basically invented going on date nights with his wife. And created this like checklist of like things that he does to like maintain a healthy relationship. What an idiot. And he responded to almost all of them I saw and was like, hey, you don't know my relationship, but appreciate you weighing in. Like, best of luck to you. And like, people were being so mean to him and he was responding with nothing but kindness. Then you have the Nick Huber, who like, I think every Friday night just like sits down and thinks through like very carefully manufactured drama. And that's another way to do it. And both of those guys, you know, crush it. So I think you, like everything in life, you can pick a lane. I think it's hard to switch out of the lanes, though. Like, if Nick Huber's being nice for too long on Twitter, I'm like, what's going on here?
What's going on?
If Sahil Bloom was ever super rude to somebody, I'd be like, what's going on here? Like, I think you have to pick the lane and then, like, you're in that lane or else it, like, throws off all of your followers. But I think both are you know, tactically good strategies.
I did tweet today, and the thing is, it's gotten a lot of pickup because it is actually the thing I've been thinking about a lot with social media, is how the optimal strategy to grow an audience is to pick a cause that's a polemic cause, and you pick a side of it, and you just argue the same points over and over again forever.
Yep.
And like, that's how you grow very quickly. Like, Justin Welch has done it. I'm trying to think of some other people that do it on Twitter, and they're way ahead of me in followers. But like, I can't do that. Like, I would blow my brain out if I had to talk about one idea for the rest of my life, because I like to think of ideas and I like to change my mind on stuff. And like,
Like
it's super frustrating to do that. And I appreciate Nick actually will pick five different polemics and then rotates through them. You know, it's like, okay, well, at least he's got a repertoire.
That's what I mean. I think all of these X guy accounts will get pigeonholed into. You know, we have our own amongst, you know, the creators of this podcast. We know people that have created these accounts, right? Yeah. What's yours?
Nearshore guy. I'm doing it for our company Near. Yeah.
So
we have a company Near that does offshore. I'm Nearshore guy. I'm totally transparent about it. And if the tweets sound like I wrote them, it's because I did.
Amazing. So it's like the problem with these, I think, as somebody who does a lot on Twitter and on social media, is it's really hard to stay in that lane and grow the audience. But I think when you can do it, to your point, you become tremendously successful. But like, use your car dealership guy or whatever his name is. Every day he logs on and he has 20 tweets about like, used car prices are up, used car prices are down, auto loans are all getting crushed, the world is going to hell in a handbasket because like people have... You know, people owe like $80,000 on average on their new car over like 77 months. And this is like huge. And it's just like every day I see the same tweet and it's actually interesting stuff for like a couple times. Yeah. And then you're like, oh my gosh, dude, you've said this 1,000 times. The guy's gotten 500,000 followers in a year with the strategy. It's great.
So I'm buddies in real life with car dealership guy. And I can attest he's a really good person. Like, he's really sweet, really good guy. And you could see it in the tweets, like he genuinely wants to help people. But at least like, you know, I've asked them like, hey, like, you know, cars are not going to be interesting forever. But then I go on YouTube and like the amount of like the Doug DeMuro clones of people who make car stuff on YouTube is like, it's like the Marianas Trench of depth. Like, it is like, there's so much car stuff. I had no idea because frankly, I hate cars. I wish I didn't have to own one. That's why I drive a 2017 Subaru. Everything about cars I hate. I want to get from place A to B. But that's why I asked him. I was like, do you think there's enough depth there? And he's like, yes, you don't understand people's passion for cars. And I was like,
I agree with him. I think if you with any of these things, if you don't understand the space, like, I don't really get the whole sneaker collector, watch collector thing, but there's like sneaker guy and watch guy. But I mean, they're all going to crush it. They already have. They've attracted a smaller audience because I think that they're tweeting maybe less frequently than car dealership guy. But that whole category is going to crush. If you can wake up and just talk about the exact same thing day in and day out, which is the hard part of those accounts.
I have a solution for this problem.
Yeah.
I'm hiring a writer.
There you go.
I'm turning all my social media stuff into a business. So like I've hired a CEO and I've hired the writer. We're trying to get the writer to start. You want to know what the problem with the writer is? He got laid off from his job and he is subject to a non-compete. I'm like, what the hell did you sign when you joined this company? Like it's crazy. And then another person I made an offer to recently, like he would have to return a $30,000 bonus if he came to work for me after a year or before a year. And I was like, what did you sign when you took this job? Did you think about this?
Let's make our third absent co-host Alex Cohen write for you. He'll give you a discount, I think. So we'll see.
I have heard he's very talented at the S posting. Not as talented as, I don't know. It'd be interesting. Do you think you're better than him at shit posting, or do you think it's
he's not here to defend himself. I totally am by a mile. You know, if he wants to dispute that, then he can come on the next pod and argue it with me. No, I think we have very different styles, but he's great.
You're like, I knew from your tweets, like you and I have never met in real life, but I knew you were really smart because I could just tell from your tweets. Like, it's just super easy to tell. But like, here's what I'll give you. I think that you have a different talent than he does. I think that you can run at 98% excellent tweets, like in and out. Like you are like, you're like the Lou Gehrig of tweets, right? Like, I think you got this, right?
Okay.
Like this shows my baseball knowledge, by the way. I don't know any baseball player after George Brett, but before that. I could tell you lots about who was on the 1929 Yankees.
Yeah.
Then on the same team, you have Babe Ruth, who struck out a lot, but every once in a while, he hits a dinger. Mm-hmm. And some of yours are freaking amazing, and I try to compliment you on it. But like, I don't think either of us has reached the level of the chicken in the coffee pot thing that he, you know, that Alex did. Every once in a while, he's Reggie Jackson. Like, he hits it 4 miles. And I'll give that to Alex, which, you know, it's like, there's two ways to get there in terms of greatness.
Totally. Yeah. When I crossed, I think 100, maybe 100,000 followers on Twitter, I had never gotten a single tweet above 20,000 likes, which is hard to get tweets above 20,000, but I'll bet Alex has like 25 of them. He like regularly hits stuff out of the park. So.
Dingers. So guess how many tweets I've had get more than 20,000? Two.
I was going to say five.
It's two.
Yeah,
two. One hit 50 and one hit like 37,000. Yeah. But other than that, it's just like,
it's tough.
Thread boy / crazy uncle. That's my vibe. Crazy uncle that you're like, what does Uncle Mike do again? I don't understand. What's his job? Like that's the 9-year-old asking.
This shows you though, you can build a passionate following of like 150,000 other people that somehow care about this like odd combination of like running a coffee shop and running firework stores and building software companies and CEO compensation and like whatever you're tweeting about, 150,000 people are into it. So it's working, you know, and that's all that matters.
I'm here to help, my friend. Well, yeah. I mean, my whole strategy is like, if I send love out to the universe and I just never send hate out, like my followers, like my follower quality, I'm really proud of it, right? Because I've seen where, and I think we've talked about this before, there are certain creators and certain big accounts, their followers show up at my stuff and I'm like, okay, I will delete my original post because I hate their followers so much. Mm-hmm. Their followers are so toxic.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. Thank you for educating me on the narcissist. Did we solve the narcissist thing or is it
I don't know. I think everybody just, you know, if you're like that, if you're a Grant Cardone, if you haven't made a YouTube video that's got like 35,000 likes from idiots in the last 72 hours, like you need to do something to be in the spotlight. And so I think that they just like, they chase the ambulance, they run into the fire, they do whatever they have to get attention. And that's that.
I can't do it.
It's tough.
I just can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I mean, you have to live in a different planet. I just can't do it. I don't want to. I really don't want to. That's, I think, where my head is on the whole thing. Okay, thank you. You said you had something good to talk about. Let's just move on from my total flummoxing about how narcissists happen. I guess I should like just face reality.
All right. We've all heard of SPACs. Have you ever heard of a SRAC? S-R-A-C.
The only word that actually came to mind when you said that was actually a racist word. And I was like, okay, I can't say that.
So it's not that that I know of. Yeah.
So what, it's a SRAC? Is that like the thing ate Boba Fett in Return of the Jedi? Or
this is different? Like the classic, this is like classic federal government thing where you take eight fairly long words and then you combine them down into one. So this is the FDIC-SRAC, which is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, right? Which is an agency of the federal government. And they have a Systemic Resolution Advisory Committee. And this is like the most interesting. I can't believe that I didn't learn this until today, but I feel like our audience needs to hear about this because this was right up my alley. So what happened in middle of March when Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank both collapsed within a 24-hour period? The SRAC stepped in. This is a pool of 100 crazy legit former bank presidents, CFOs, bank directors, board members that sits on the sidelines, waits for banks to fail. And then when they do fail, the FDIC taps them out of this pool to go like take over the bank and run it. So when Silicon Valley Bank fails on March 19th, which somehow that was less than a month ago, it feels like that was 3 months ago, this guy, Timothy Mayopoulos, who has a legendary background. He was a senior guy at Deutsche Bank, then was like a very senior general counsel at Bank of America. Then he was president of Fannie Mae. And then he's been on this committee where he's just like taking these board member seats with Lending Club and Blend and not working. And for the last 3 years, he's been a member of this FDIC Systemic Resolution Advisory Committee. Silicon Valley Bank fails. He has to set up the bridge bank, go fire the CEO of Silicon Valley Bank, tell all the other executives that the FDIC is basically seizing them, go try to keep all of the customers, try to make sure that the employees don't quit. Like, he gets on a plane that day and is the de facto CEO that has to like swoop in and take this whole operation over. It is pretty wild. And the exact same thing happened with Signature Bank.
Yeah, I saw the crazy video with this guy, Mayopoulos.
Yeah.
Like, why wasn't he the president already?
I don't know.
He was delightfully competent.
Yeah. And then so this other guy, Greg Carmichael, it's the same thing. He has this pretty crazy run where he's working at GE. Then he's the chief information officer at Emerson for like 10 years. Then he's a EVP and eventually the president and CEO of Fifth Third Bank. And when Signature, and then he retired a couple months ago, he goes into this pool of 100 executives that the federal government just keeps on tap when bad shit happens. And as soon as Signature Bank fails, he's on a plane the next day. He's taking over. He's on calls with customers trying to like get them to not pull money out. Like, he is doing, they're like just takeover artists. And I couldn't figure out if these guys get compensated or if it's just sort of like a privilege to be in this pool. But it's sort of a like the committee nominates people from within this pool to step up, and then the FDIC sort of approves them all within like a couple hours. So these guys are on a, I think this Wall Street Journal article that talks about this said that this guy, Tim Mayopoulos, who took over SVB, was literally on like a Spirit Airlines flight, middle seat out to go take over the bank within like 4 hours of the FDIC announcing that they were taking over. So it's pretty awesome.
But did they want to kill him on the way?
Yeah, I know. Poor guy.
Wait, I thought this was a bank thing. I didn't know it was a hit.
Yeah, exactly. Poor Tim. Yeah.
So this is really interesting. So the FDIC has all of these advisory committees, and this one is SREC, the Systemic Resolution Advisory Committee, that deal with systemically important financial companies, cover companies pursuant to the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. So this is basically the idea that instead of breaking up banks so none of them were so big they could bring down America, we decided just to create a committee to watch them more closely.
Yeah.
That was our solution.
Yeah. And what's amazing is they actually had, this is like, because in my mind, watching this unfold as somebody who has worked at, I think, pretty fast moving companies and also has run companies as a founder and as a CEO, the speed at which the federal government, I mean, I think it was easy to criticize at the time, especially if you had a lot of money sitting in Silicon Valley Bank, but the speed at which, you know, you have to hand it to the federal government, how this bank can basically, their stock goes to zero on a Friday. By Monday, they have a full recovery plan to get everybody 100% of their money back. So how does that all happen within a 48-hour period? I was like going down this rabbit hole over the weekend, and then the Wall Street Journal wrote an article about it. It's you've got to hand it to them. I think it's pretty amazing. But the funny thing about this committee, at least as far as I could tell, is that it came out of the 2008-2009 financial collapse. The committee wasn't set up until 2017. So in typical like federal government, you know, takes forever. It took them 8 years, 10 years to get this thing set up. But now that they have this pool of people, they're able to just like jump in and swoop over at a moment's notice.
Well, and it ties back to this idea, like I was arguing on Twitter that people are like, our infrastructure is crumbling. And I'm like, where? Like, where's the crumbling infrastructure? Just because we don't have hyperloops and flying cars, like, I don't see buildings falling over. Planes are not falling from the sky. Like, there is a 3-minute drive for me to the airport, as is for 3 million other people here in San Antonio. Like, where is the crumbling infrastructure? And like, meanwhile, the next day I get a text because my Spanish lesson is canceled because my Spanish teacher, the building next door to her, fell over. And 6 people died, like the whole building just fell over. Like, so like, it's kind of one of those things where like people get so accustomed to things going well that they think that that's normal when it's kind of magic. Like the fact that it's safer to fly in a plane from here to Chicago than it is for me to drive from my house to the airport, which is 3 minutes away. Like that is a greater risk for me death wise than flying to Chicago. Like that is a miracle.
I mean, you're good in a 2017 Subaru. Incredible crash safety recommendations on those. But I mean, for most people, you know, in their fancy cars, they've got a real life risk by doing that.
Oh, how dare you? Well, also, I can't, I can't break 55 miles an hour in that thing. It's not possible.
There you go.
But it's this thing where like we just get so accustomed, like the scalded frog, the boiling frog. You just get so accustomed to the fact that things are amazing that you forget that they're amazing. Totally. And this is one of those things, like when the federal government does something really well, like people are like, well, that's the way it's supposed to work. But it's like, no, that's kind of miraculous. You know what used to happen? A Roman legion used to come to your house, burn it down, take all your stuff and leave. And they were your government. Like that's the way it works. So like there's a lot to be really thankful for. Don't get me started.
Totally. And I think it's also easy to complain about a big, you know, unnecessarily bloated federal government, which is certainly the case. But look, like when bad things happen in the world, financially, from a terrorist perspective, from a military perspective, like the U.S. has random people that are just sitting around waiting for these things to happen. So this group just meets every month since 2017. We haven't really had a bank failure. In the same month, I think we have 3 major banks fail. And so for 5-6 years, these guys are just sitting around meeting periodically, looking at, you know, potential scenarios. And then when this happens, they're able to take over 2 of the top 20 regional banks in a matter of 48 hours, which is exactly what we want. So,
dude, there's so many miracles around like that. And people just like we're winning a war in Eastern Europe are doing pretty well by Venmo. Like, that's what America's doing. We're just sending a lot of money over there. Like, there's, you know, we're not sending troops over there. Like, it's a miracle. Like, it's pretty amazing. So, you know, I think, like, if everybody just needs to chillax. That's what I think. Yeah. Like, slow down, read some history, and forget things are pretty darn good. Like,
we're going to be fine.
They've been worse. Much worse.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Dylan, one of the co-founders of Baton Market. We're the first small business acquisition marketplace providing support and insights to the small business owner. We empower small business owners with their valuation and let them see how they stack up to local competitors, all for free. Along with this data, we also recommend ways to increase their valuation. And when it's time to sell, Baton is here to help with our in-house transaction advisors with decades of experience. So whether you're just curious about your valuation or considering moving on to the next thing, head to batonmarket.com and click the Get Started button today.
All right, can we talk about the following? I think that Substack... I want your take on what Substack is doing with Twitter, which is the most genius punch up thing ever to take advantage of the fact that Twitter is now owned by one of these narcissists that I talk about, the drama kings. So it's like, oh, like I'm going to go punch up. I'm going to give a half-hearted effort as Substack to try to copy your business that I know is not going to work, but I'm going to do it so I get tons of publicity. And like, I just think that Substack is just playing some 3D chess here. And I'm curious what you think. Like, I just think it's so smart.
I mean, I think with Substack, the question is, where do they go from here? Just as a business. I think if you take Twitter out of it for a second, my understanding is that they were once valued or had raised at like $600 or $800 million valuation. I think they're doing like $20 million in net revenue after they pay out creators.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that growth is also stagnating, right? You have these other rapidly growing competitors where like anybody can now create a publishing business that helps creators get the word out. So Beehive right. and all these other people have come out. So yeah, I mean, like, where do you go? I think you have to try to do something to chip away at what a like big legacy social company that actually makes lots of money is doing. A lot of Substack writers are promoting their stuff on Twitter. So therefore this Notes product, I think, makes sense to a certain extent. But I mean, it's not going to go anywhere. There's no chance.
You want to know why I'm not publishing on Stupid Notes? You know how many followers I have over there? Zero. You know how many followers I got on Twitter? 160,000. So I'm going to keep doing that. So, I mean, I think that's really smart by Substack. The thing I think is really dumb is I think they're skating to where the puck was and not to where the puck is. Yep. Like where the puck was is, okay, I'm going to recruit Matt Taibbi or whoever, and they're going to build an $8,000 Stratechery. The next one of those, they're going to build an $800,000 a year newsletter. And there's maybe like 10 of those a year that come out. And it's going to be subscription and maybe a few ads here and there, and that's it. But the reality is like people like me, like the Nick Hubers of the world and stuff like that, like everybody realizes you can make a lot more money using your audience to promote offline businesses than like figure out how to charge somebody $6 a month to write content. So like that's where like ConvertKit and like these other things are there. But Beehive, like I look at it, I'm like, why are you guys going after this market? Like there's 8 Matt Taibbis in the world that are going to make a business here. Like there's like 1,000 doofuses like me. Right. Cause they're all, you know, you look how many of me's there are, right? Versus every single Matt Taibbi. And there's, you know, 5 of those. Like,
yeah.
So anyway, they're not seeing where the world's going, which also they haven't called me and asked for my opinion. So YOLO.
we'll clip this out and send it to them and say, here you go, unsolicited advice from your fictional board members.
All these platforms have DM'd me and they're like, I saw you moved your newsletter to ConvertKit. Why did you do it? I'm like, okay, here's why. Like I can put people on drip campaign. I can send them all my stuff. If I get a new follower, they can see all my greatest hits because I don't want to write something new every week. Like give me a break. That's a lot of work. And then they're like, well, we're not targeting that use case. I'm like, that is the future use case. Mm-hmm. Like that is how people are going to monetize their audiences, not $5 a month subscriptions. Like give me a break.
Totally. Yeah. And I, to that point, I mean, the competition for my little newsletter, for your much bigger medium-sized newsletter, right? Like, I think, you know, we each have somewhere between thousands and low tens of thousands of subscribers. But to your point, I mean, like the amount of these companies that have sales teams or growth people that are DMing me trying to get my like 5,000 member newsletter to move over to their platform is insane. So that leads me to believe that like if you have over a couple thousand followers, you're probably like a top 10% newsletter on any of these platforms. And yeah, but I think the Notes thing, it's not gonna happen. It's not gonna happen.
Yeah. It's like Amazon trying to build their own eBay. Good luck with that. Network effects are a bitch.
Yep.
That's how it is. But like, so even if they, back to this, like Beehive or any of those guys recruit you, you know, my newsletter has 13,000 people. How many, you know, and I get 60% open rate. Okay, great. Like, and then there's some bigger ones than mine and I'm trying to grow mine, but whatever. But like, I'm never going to try to monetize it the way they want me to monetize it. Cause like, why would I do $5 a year, $5 a month subscription for 1,000 people when I can turn around and generate 20 leads for a business that I'm an owner in? And that'll be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like I would be stupid to enter their business model. So anyway, my chat, maybe I should do a whole Twitter that's just me DMing people how to fix their business and them ignoring me. So
this is good. we'll have the next segment be Galaxy Girly Brain fixes businesses. And it'll be like Shark Tank style. We won't invest in it, but we'll just try to fix the business and then move on to the next thing.
Oh, I got pitched a podcast idea. Here, I'll give it to you.
Okay.
The podcast idea was Dave Ramsey, but for small businesses. So basically what you do is whatever, Amit Sethi, Dave Ramsey, like going through somebody's financials and they're like, oh, you mean I make $5,000 a month? I shouldn't have a $4,000 truck payment? Like that, but for small business. was the pitch. And I was like, that would be really entertaining. It broke my cardinal rule of like a lot of work and prep. And but it'd be super interesting.
It's one of those things where you're going to have a problem very quickly finding business owners who come on about their actual problems, right? So people are going to make up problems for the podcast. I think you have this guy like Nathan Latka or whatever, who's hated amongst entrepreneurs because he invites them on his podcast and then like forces people to give him revenue numbers. And I think everybody just like lies and makes it up to get off the hot seat. So, I mean, if like any business owner, especially a small business owner, if I have a podcast and we say, hey, we're going to diagnose your problems, you're never going to bring your real problems because your real problems are like, you think your like VP of finance actually is like way overpaid and she doesn't work that hard. And like, you're not going to bring that up on air, right? Yeah. So yeah. It's the Dave Ramsey stuff works because it's anonymized or semi-anonymized, which I think could work with a small business, but it's probably too triangulatable back to the business or back to the owner, where like the risk of coming on your podcast in exchange for some like shitty advice isn't worth it. But I like the idea.
I think it would be super interesting. Here's the bigger problem is that for me to truly give you a strong opinion about how to do your business better, like I have to either work with the product for a while, like I've had to be like what I'm doing, building a newsletter for like 18 months. Like I've spent countless hours like in social media Gridly world. So like I have context to think about it. But if you showed up tomorrow and you're like, my plumbing business is only making 12% EBITDA margin and I think it should make 25% EBITDA margin, I need to ask you like 3 hours of questions. Yeah. To really diagnose what the problem is. Like, okay, walk me through your business model. Like, okay, how are you pricing? Like, who's your competition? Like, why'd you price it this way? Okay, where are you strong? What are your customer NPS? Like, I have to do so much research to get there that there's no way that's good radio. It's just not going to be good.
You know, back to your original thing, but in a much nicer tone. Speaking of a guy who has like 6 pieces of information that he's just doubled down over 40 years, Dave Ramsey. I mean, he's producing 3 to 4 hours of new, unique content every day, Monday to Friday. And it's the exact same callers. For 40 years, people have called in and said, hey, Dave, God bless you. Hey, I'm down here in Nebraska. My wife and I make $60,000 combined. We're looking to buy a McLaren 720S. The car payment's going to be, you know, $180,000 a year. Is that something we should go for? And he's like, no, you shouldn't. Next caller. Hey, Dave. It's Bill. Hey, Dave. From Alameda, California. I make $45,000 a year. I'm looking to get a truck that costs $90,000 a year. Is that a wise financial investment? No, it's not. Next caller. For 40 years, and the guy's made like $300 million doing this. It's incredible. I love him.
You know what I like about Dave Ramsey? I think there are a number of online media people that kind of put themselves there as, you know, good old boy hucksters, right? Like, no offense to Warren Buffett, but he plays this up. Mm-hmm. Like, that dude is a shark, a smart shark. Like I remember listening to an interview with him when Lehman Brothers was going down in 2008. And he was like, yeah, fax me over some stuff. Like thousands of people were about to lose their jobs and he didn't want to hang around the hotel to get a fax. Like it was that kind of story. And it was like,
yeah.
Oh, like, you know, like the first thing to do if somebody has an over the top persona that they're cultivating is go look at the other, you know, just assume the exact opposite and it may end up being true. Right. And so some of these narcissists that we're talking about, like, you know, there's certain narcissists that claim to be billionaires and they're definitely not. There's certain narcissists that claim to be very savvy at business. They're actually idiots. Like that's all pretty straightforward in terms of how to think about it. But like, anyway, I what I like about Dave Ramsey is like you actually talk to him and like he's transparent about being very savvy at business. He's transparent that he's smart. He's transparent that he's a shark. Like, I think all of that, I appreciate that about the guy, right? Yep. As opposed to what some of the fakers do, which yeah. I don't like faking it.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, can I pitch you my new business and you poop all over it? Or did already pitch it to you in the pre-show? Or should we talk about your idea?
Yeah, let's talk about the business.
Okay. All right. I already pitched it to you, though. We should have clicked record when I was pitching it.
I didn't get my full reaction.
We're launching it tomorrow. We're soft launching it tomorrow. So the goal is we're just consider this like the pilot. We're trying to get like the first 50 customers. But the idea is we are building a social network or a community and learning portal for what I call very small businesses. So less than 30 employees. So the background is we went and like interviewed over 50 of these people, listened to hundreds of them who have these small businesses. And they kind of kept saying the same thing. Like, I don't know how to scale my business. I want to grow it. I want to get bigger so I'm not stuck here every day. Like, I don't know how to do some of this very basic stuff. They would ask questions like, how do I hire people? Or like, how do I find a lawyer? Like, just problems every single business has. And they didn't really have the ability to go to something like EO or YPO or Hampton, right? Like, which is out there now and is very popular amongst Twitter folks. They couldn't go to one of these networks, and they didn't work for a couple of reasons. One is, like, there wasn't an educational component. Like, they expect you to already figure out like how to hire people or like how to hire a lawyer, like or find a lawyer, like, or what happens if you get sued? Like, they expect you to know that when you show up to Vistage or YPO. And so what we're creating is basically this online community and a set of playbooks where it's like, okay, for every business problem that like makes business taste like chicken, like, we're going to have one of those, like, where you can just say, okay, I need to hire a lawyer. Well, like, tell me how to do it. Like, I don't want to go take a 4-month marketing course to know how to make a billboard, right? So like, tell me how to do it and give me it all on one page. So we're doing that and we're launching it tomorrow. So I'll pause there. I feel like I could have done a better job, and I did a better job in the previous pitch than this one, but that's a business. It's called Scale Path, by the way. It's a path to scale your business.
When you're on the hot seat, it's always harder to pitch the business, but I like it. Are you going to have like moderators? Are there actual like meetings, or is it mostly going to be asynchronous? Like, how do you pick these like cohorts of, you know, who you're getting advice from and how the advice is delivered, which is important?
Yeah. So in talking to these folks, many of them do not have the time to go do what Vistage wants you to do or YPO wants you to do, which is go take a half or a full day away from your business. Like, you just can't step away. Like, at that size, like, you're too ingrained in the business and you need to get yourself out of the business. So it's also at the price point they can afford, which is like $2,000 to $4,000 a year. Like, you really can't run EO style forums, right? Like, you can't have like half day meetings anyway. So the idea is to basically start with this first cohort of like, say 50 to 100, have them in a community, and then you have cross community kind of opportunities where we'll group people by business type or scale or region. And you would have access to say 2 to 5 of these sub communities across the whole thing. And that's how it scales to where, okay, we could have 1,000 companies in this, but they're broken into smaller kind of sub communities. And then the other thing we found when we dug into like Facebook small business groups or stuff like that, like, they're full of spammers and like low quality people. Like, somebody has to be in there moderating the heck out of it. So like, we're going to do that. And then the experts, I'm going to be the first expert, but then other experts we'll bring in are like a sales compensation person. Like, and that'll be a person who like, we just pay them to be there and be there to answer questions and consult with people and stuff like that and give fireside chats and all that kind of stuff. So that's the idea, but no forums, because I don't think people are ready for it. Like, they're not there yet.
Yeah, makes sense. I think when I look at the company that has done the best for a certain type of small businesses or a certain type of small business is Y Combinator, which is their Bookface product, and it's all forum based. And so I'm very bullish on the idea of using forums eventually, like asynchronous forums, different from like a live forum where you're each getting up and talking. So I think like asynchronous content for this group of people is going to be killer if it's not like in the initial MVP. But I think overall, it's definitely like a very needed thing. There's the vast majority of business owners can't pay and won't pay $50,000 a year and give up, you know, days of time. That, you know, those business owners, you're in a different class if you're able to afford that financially and hourly to step away, to your point.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, the average business owner is like going through it at any given time and they need like quick tactical advice. And so I think like that's where some of these asynchronous tools can be really helpful, because everybody has the same problem. And I think that there's an entire way to like better vet, you know, agencies and like service providers. I need an M&A lawyer. I need a immigration lawyer because one of my guys is going to lose his like H-1B status. Like, all of these things come up every single day in the Y Combinator, you know, Bookface chat. And it's like the most helpful product that YC gives. Like, you would probably, the average small business would be wise to give up 5% of your company to YC so they had access to this forum.
I need a trademark attorney, and they're like, call this guy.
Yeah, it turns out there's only 200 problems that a business owner faces, and they're just facing them at different times. And somebody has dealt with your problem before. Somebody has the expert. Somebody has like the contact. Somebody knows the person at Instagram that can get your account back. Somebody knows the person at, you know, Facebook, the agency who's like the best at sort of getting ROI on your Facebook ads. And so anything that you need around growth, recruiting, engineering help, if it's a services business around like what to do with customers who aren't invoicing, how to get people to pay invoices, like these are solved problems that I think YC Bookface does a good job of consolidating. And the problem with that is it's only available to 5,000 companies. Like you have to take investment from them to get this. But, you know, I think for a different set of businesses, a similar thing, a mix of like live in-person things, experts coming in, and content and forums and chats and resources for them is an excellent idea. I like it a lot.
So when you're in Bookface, I knew inside of YC, they break you into sub cohorts, right? Mm-hmm. Like if 100 companies come in at a time, they'll split you amongst 6 partners, right? And each partner has their 15 companies that they work with. And I'm just using rough numbers. So then when you get into Bookface post YC, is Bookface, do you have like your batch? I guess there's the batch, then there's a sub batch. I don't know what the terminology is, but that 15 group, are you like, is your sub batch still like sub batch 009? Like, are you still in with those people in a separate forum? Or are you just with your whole batch and then there's like a bigger thing amongst the whole thing?
Yeah, think of it as a message board where you have now what's close to, call it like 37 components. So there's 30 components, which are the batches that go all the way back to 2005. So like in 2005, there's a winter batch and a summer batch. You can post something to this forum and you can just show it to the companies, like the 9 companies that were in the original summer 05 batch or whatever it was. Or you can post something to general. Outside of general, then you have like real estate, which is everything from, hey, we're subleasing an office, or hey, we need an office, or increasingly, it's like rich, awesome founders who are like, hey, my 7-bedroom house in Napa, you know, we're not staying in it for like 3 months because we're at our Aspen house. But if anybody like wants to like book it for free, like it's just like giving back to the community at a certain scale. And so you have like hiring advice, you have financial advice, you have real estate, you have like all of these subcategories. So you can post, I think 95% of the content, I would guess, gets posted to the entire group. But what's amazing about it is you can go back and you can see the stuff that like the Stripe founders were posting about when they were going through YC. Like it goes back now to 2005. So you have this like searchable record, which I think is searched through Algolia, which is a YC company. And this like search is really good. So you can search like when we were looking at lawyers, we just put in the prospective lawyer's name who we wanted to use. And at the time we went through YC, there had been 2,000 companies before us that had gone through, and multiple people had recommended this guy as like, hey, Brian's really great, you know, reach out to him. So we felt really good. It's like, you know, you get ratings on service providers. There's an entire investor database, which is important to a certain class, which is like, if you're taking on debt, if you're taking on venture debt, if you're getting a line of credit, if you're raising money from a VC, if you're looking to do a private equity deal, what's the rating and reputation of that bank, of that lender, of that VC, of that PE firm through the YC founders? And so they encourage like every single member who's in YC to go like rate their VCs, rate your venture debt provider. And so you end up with just this like private forum of like gold that is searchable. And it turns out like tactically, a lot of the advice from 2005, 2008, 2010 is still the same. When it felt like the sky was falling 30 days ago, maybe it still is, but it's just slower. Like when everyone, like a third of YC like lost their bank accounts overnight. It turns out like a lot of the advice in the forums that were, you know, dated in 2007, 2008, 2009, all of a sudden became like very helpful around what to do, how to inform employees of bad news, how to keep your executives calm, like how to raise emergency funding. Like the stuff just never changes that frequently. So something like that for like the average small business owner is going to be really important.
Yeah, I got you. Okay. That's super interesting. Yeah, and I think there will become a time where we need to figure out if we're going to graduate from Slack to one of the other platforms. Our Bookface is built from scratch, right? And I think they probably have 2 or 3 developers full-time on Bookface inside of Y Combinator.
Yeah.
But it's also, that's an interesting interesting concept and use case from my Holdco course, which, you know, there's 100 people in there who bought the course. Mm-hmm. And the use case that ends up being the number one use case is like, I need to hire a lawyer for this. I need a service provider for this. Like, so we've started to build a list of like trusted service providers that people recommend. And it's being added as a bonus, like module, like in the course.
Nice.
So I think that'll get used. I think that'll end up being a big use case of this. And frankly, like I'm in Vistage, you know, an in-person thing here in San Antonio, which by the way, like Vistage and YPO and EO, like they could all target this lower end of the market. They've all just chosen not to. It's very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it probably I had friends at McKinsey and Bain, and you asked them like, why don't you go down market and try to help a Series D company? And they've tried to do it, but all of a sudden, like reputationally, it kind of is like a bad look to be working with a Series C company that's burning, you know, $30 million a month when like you want to be known for like helping Coca-Cola, like, you know, bribe African governments to like move more product into those countries or like whatever they're doing, you know? Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. Yeah. They try to keep a high bar, which is maybe the right thing to do for their brand, but it definitely opens up a possibility for new entrants to, you know, take what I think is probably like the more interesting share of that market.
I think for me, it's like, it also opens up this thing above like a Vistage or a YPO. Like I think there's an opportunity for like people who have graduated like beyond those networks, like, and maybe are at bigger scale, or more sophisticated. Like I'm still looking for that network. And there's like Tiger. Have you heard of Tiger 21? Are you familiar with that?
Yep.
So, but that's basically for people who graduated from Vistage or YPO by selling their company and being like stupid rich and just figuring out how to hang out and spend money. Or invest money and with other rich dudes. Though I think some women are in it too, but mostly every time I look, it's all dudes.
Yeah.
But like what Tiger 21 is, but like for ballers, like I want to join that where I go in and like, it's like this FDIC advisory committee thing. How do I get invited to this? Actually, it looks terrible, by the way. Like, I think this is,
you can go like read their meeting notes. it's not fun. It's like probably good. Probably like if you're in that world, it's probably sick to put on your LinkedIn. But outside of that, I don't think it's a great time by any means. But yeah,
there was an opportunity in our respective 20s to choose the red pill or the blue pill. And I was on a path where I could be, you know, I could have kept doing that. I would be probably CEO of some publicly traded corporation now. I could have played the game and being on boards and, you know, seeing my kids 3 to 4 minutes a week. And play the red pill game, or I decided to play the blue pill game, which is recording a podcast with you in front of a knit picture of America, slightly represented well, if you look at my background.
Yep.
But like, yeah, I couldn't do that. Like, I could not show up to that meeting. Just no way. I'd need to be on Zambian or something.
Yeah, maybe they are. That's why it all goes so smoothly. I don't know.
I would definitely need to be high to make that meeting, and I don't do drugs, so. Okay, well, that's super helpful. Well, yeah, by the time this comes out, we'll have, we're doing it, hopefully a Twitter thread tomorrow. Hopefully we'll go from, we're at 13 customers right now. The goal is to get to 50 and then kind of 50 to 100 and kind of figure it out then. So I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting. I think there's a lot of folks that are hungry for this kind of stuff, which, you know, I told you, like the fact we're at whatever, $26,000 ARR without launching, I was like, oh, there might be something here.
Good
this
sign.
Might be a good business.
Yep. Love it.
But yeah, I really welcome your feedback. Maybe you guys can coach me again next week. I'm sure Alex will have some opinions.
Alex is gonna come on hot. Man, I hate this. We'll float an idea by him next week that we'll get some dissenting opinions on.
What is the idea for next week?
Well, we're gonna have to come up with one. We need something that Alex is gonna hate. We need more spice, we need more drama, you know. It's not fun when you're just pitching good ideas and I'm saying, yeah, I like that.
I don't know, man. I got smarter from this episode. I thought this was good.
I think this is basically too.
If we end up with this podcast just getting together and it's like, hey, once a week we make each other smarter. And like, I ask you, why are there narcissists? And you go, I don't know.
Like, I don't know, man.
It's like, okay.
It's worth thinking about though.
They're such narcissists. It's crazy. I don't understand it. I can't do it. It's like watching, it's like watching Babe Ruth have sex with Lou Gehrig. Like, just don't see it.
the ultimate baseball reference. You know, the other last crazy thing on this is with the Grant Cardones, you know, no matter how, what scale of rich this guy is, it's like he has money. I don't know if he's like a billionaire. He's not a billionaire like he says he is, but like he probably has tens, hundreds, millions of dollars. It's like, why do you need to show up to this Twitter spaces? Why do you need to keep up the grift? Yeah. Like it's like, you know, I kind of, it's more understandable when people do this, when they have nothing to lose and they have a lot to gain. Cause it's kind of that whole, right, like fake it till you make it and just like be in the spotlight. But there's so many people who have it all. And for whatever reason, they can't give up being in the spotlight, even if the spotlight is the stupid spotlight. Like you are, right, just highlighting how big of an idiot this guy is. And there's like a whole category of people that have just made that their career, often after doing a whole bunch of like legitimate stuff before that. But yeah, new sucker born every minute. People fall for it.
I don't get that aspect. Well, and I couldn't do the like the bringing on drama intentionally thing as a way to grow like your publicity. Like I just like the Donald Trump, and then there's a bunch of people on Twitter, Grant Cardone. Like I just can't do it. Like I'm just not. It's not. I can't do that. I just look at it, I'm like, it's like running a 4-minute mile. It's like I can't do that. Like I don't get it. But then there's people that look at me and they're like, why do you keep doing this? Like, cause there's people that get to be my age and they have enough money never to work again. And they're just like, you know what I'm doing? Got to make some knives in my garage. Like that's my hobby. I got a workbench. I'm gonna make some knives.
Yep.
This is one of my buddies, by the way.
Sweet life. So, love it.
I kill myself. That sounds terrible. All right. Oh, do you want to give a shout out, from our sponsor?
Yeah. What's our sponsor?
Fyre Festival 2.
Oh yeah. Oh man. Yeah, Fyre Festival 2 is happening and they're sponsoring this podcast. They're actually sponsoring the next 20 podcasts, I think. So I'm going to send Billy McFarland an invoice. I think he might listen to this podcast. So, Billy, I'm going to hit you up in the DMs. Yeah, Billy McFarland DM'd me, over the weekend and was like, hey, I'm doing Fyre Fest 2. Do you want to come? And I said, what? And he said, yeah, influencers are the new, or no. Shit posters are the new influencers. You should come. And I didn't follow up after that, but I think allegedly this thing's actually happening. I don't know if we should be the ones promoting it, but you know, they're paying us $500,000 an episode to sponsor. So I guess we'll let them, you know, we'll let them wire the money into our account. So
my favorite was Nikita Bear on Twitter.
Yeah.
And he posted his response to Billy McFarland when Billy McFarland was like, hey, how's it going? And Nikita goes, I don't know what kind of grift you're suggesting, but I'm 100% in, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. All time interaction.
I mean, look, I'm kind of insulted. Billy hasn't pitched me anything. Womp, yep. Womp. Maybe he's like, that old fart's never coming. Oh, did I tell you last week I got nominated for a Lifetime Achievement Award?
No, amazing.
I got nominated for a Lifetime Achievement Award.
At Chili's or somewhere else?
I'm 48 years old, though. Okay. 48 years old.
Yeah.
They give that to old farts. I was mad. They told me you're nominated for a Lifetime Achievement Award. I was like, MF, I don't want that award. Take my name off that list.
Yeah. How do we know that you're not going to be like in the Forbes 50 under 50 and pull a grift and like everything goes downhill and they look like assholes? It's too early for that.
I was mad.
I feel like you've got to be, you can't even be close to retirement age. You have to be, that's like a long retired person thing. You sail into the sunset at 65 and at 75, you get flown in to like pick up a plaque somewhere, get taken out to a nice dinner. That's a 75-year-old thing. Yeah.
It gets worse. I got nominated for this thing. There were two nominees. Guess what position I finished in? Last. I didn't even win. I got beat by some other guy. He makes like nacho chips or something here in San Antonio. I was like, what the hell is going on here?
Wait, out of two, you got second?
I got last place. I got beat by a guy who makes snacks. I was like, what the hell is going on? I'm out here trying to change the world and I got beat by a guy who makes corn chips?
It's not worth it.
What the hell is going on with this stuff?
It's not worth it. Just give up. Go make knives in your garage and you know. Jeez, tough scene.
I took that personally.
Yeah, as you should.
Michael Jordan moment.
Yeah.
And I took that personally.
Yep.
All right, man, we'll wrap it up here so we don't hit the magical hour mark. Hey, I love talking to you. Thanks for making some time for me. Hilarious as always. If you think about the narcissist thing, like, let me know. Okay. I'm still trying to figure it out. No, you got nothing?
I got nothing. I thought you were going to go on a rant to like and subscribe. I was just smiling along. Oh, hey,
if you made it this long, do us a solid. Block us on Twitter. That's No, like and subscribe. Tell a friend about it. We're still figuring out this podcast. I think it's getting good. I'm liking it. You know, maybe next time the episode I'm on, Alex will show up. But for then, maybe. Like and subscribe. All your devices. Tell your friends. We'll see you next week.